Session two, State of the City Address. Last month, City Manager Mike Mathis submitted his first State of the City message. Mr. Mathis will share with us today how our everyday work will be guided by two principles: public service and high performance. It is my pleasure to introduce City Manager Mike Mathis.
Thanks, Carol. So I think everyone has seen my inaugural State of the City address. I was 3 weeks in when we were wildly writing it. I want to thank Tony Messina for a lot of help telling me what I needed to do and what the deadline was. That was helpful. So most of this is really my impression coming to town and without a lot of years under my belt and background in the organization. So a lot of it is what may seem like a first impression, and that's because that's what it is. But I do see a few things that I just kind of wanted to touch on today. The two main messages in there really are about public service and high performance. You can kind of merge the two and call it great public service, but really they're two different. They're not different. They're two sides of a coin, I guess. The public service is really rededicating ourselves to serving the public in the way they want to be served, and so that's a big caveat. And to know that, we have to ask, right? We have to communicate. And so the survey, which we just got through, is really an important way to do that. Points us in clear directions sometimes. So now it's up to us to sort of dive into those areas that look like issues where we could really significantly improve the satisfaction with our services. And also on the negative side, we only have so many resources. They are fairly significant. The community does give us quite a number of resources to get its work done. So sometimes we have to move where we spend money, and that can be painful. So as I look at the budget as we move forward, this retreat is really part of the budget process, isn't it? We're talking about big ideas, policy level, big picture thinking. That our conversations over the next day and a half will reflect in the budget. So this really is part of that process. How that plays out is yet to be seen. We'll discover that as we move forward. One of the things that I touched on in the State of the City that's, I think, critically important may not cost much money, but it's really how we approach our work, and that's the strategic plan. We don't really have one that ties to every department of the city. The Vision Group has done tremendous work, and I really commend them for that effort. And they've suggested hundreds of ideas to jumpstart our efforts to move the needle on those goals that they've set. Some of them we can't have a huge impact on, and they've said as much, you know. And so, but some we can. And what I want to do is then start from the other direction, from the staff side, and build toward that vision. So what we end up doing is connecting everything we do with the vision the community has for itself. And what we end up with then is, one, we know where we're going to go, and two, that gives us a chance to measure that. So the idea being, let's pick the one, two, three, five most important things per service, per goal that we want to accomplish. And they have to be measurable, accomplishable, real. And that's what the staff will focus on. One thing I'm going to recommend, and I sort of gave you a preview before, is how do you measure things outside of satisfaction? What are those benchmarks we can use repeatedly throughout time with the same comparison cities? So rather than have different cities on each analysis, you sort of pick a peer group, compare yourself against them, and then you track over time, so you kind of know if you're getting better or worse. Or there is a tool that's out there to do that. The best one I've ever seen is actually a product offered by the ICMA group that I belong to, International City Managers Association. It's called CPM, Center for Performance Management. It costs $5,000 a year, and it measures 15 service lines, including public safety and infrastructure and others. And what it allows you to do is compare yourself to other cities based on exactly what we're talking about. How much money are we spending per mile on new roads, roads we have already, maintenance, operating and maintenance. So not only those fundamental comparisons, but it also gives us a chance to put in our survey data. So not only will we compare on those sort of objective measurements, we'll be able to compare the subjective side too, about how our citizens feel about our work and say how Ann Arbor citizens feel about Ann Arbor's work. Those are interesting comparisons to make. So that's another example of something I'll be coming back with in the budget to recommend to you. You will see all of this. You'll approve what we end up doing. You will guide the work of the city. If there are things we come up with you don't love, we won't do those. And we will take that direction very seriously. So with that, the other areas that I focused on in the state of the city were things that, to me, I could see. Some of the things I could see are infrastructure. We've talked a lot about that. I'm happy to see that I wasn't seeing things that weren't there. The whole city feels that roads, infrastructure could use a bit more focus. So I will be, as we move through the budget, we'll be trying to do what we can to focus some of our investment into roads where we haven't before, and other infrastructure, storm sewers, sidewalks. You know, infrastructure is a pretty big word. Clearly, roads is the massive need there, and that's what we'll be trying to do. The other is economic development, and we have quite a bit in our agenda for the rest of the day that'll focus on that. By economic development, I'm talking about the fairly large impact of tourism, the key role that the airport plays and will play, and then our efforts, which have been so successful with the leadership of Mike Brooks, who's, I think, here today, can call people out, embarrass them. There you go. And all of you who have lent a hand on certain issues when it's come up. So those are things that we need to continue our focus on, perhaps up our game, and that's certainly things I'll be coming to you with over the next year, ideas about how to do that. So that's really sort of encapsulates the State of the City address. I have to tell you one last thing, and then I'll be quiet about this. I have been observing city staff since I've come on board. I get the luxury of doing that. I didn't come from within it. So not only do I have to, I enjoy doing that. I have seen remarkable acts of service. And I've also seen some folks struggle with limitations and constraints. So I just want to tell you my initial read of the staff is that you're blessed. You've got folks that care deeply about what they do. So with that, I'll open it up to any comments or questions. Pretty straightforward. I only left you 3 minutes too, so. Well, our MC might move us along then.
Session 2, employee survey results. Margrace Buckler, Human Resources Director, will review the 2011 Employee Engagement Survey results compiled by the MU Truman School of Public Affairs. Ms. Buckler.
This is so formal. I'm not that kind of a person. Okay. We just got this report last week to be able to share it with the J2E committee. And what I'm going to do, I'm not going to go over this page by page. I'm going to hit highlights. I'm going to talk a little bit about what we did and how we did it. The J2E committee, Journey to Excellence committee, had been talking about all the surveys. We were involved also in looking at the survey results or the survey construction for the citizen survey. And one of the guideposts on the Journey to Excellence committee list was an employee survey. We have not done a survey that could reach all of our employees since 2006. That was shortly after Bill Watkins became city manager. where we had an outside firm come in. The difference between that survey and this, this is more about engagement in their work and how they feel about their jobs and their supervisors and their coworkers and all of those sorts of things. We did not ask any pay or benefit questions in the survey that we did this spring. One of the reasons, and I think there, in the invitation to participate in the survey, we said point blank that we were not asking those questions because we've not been able to give employees raises for a couple of years, and we were more interested in how or to what extent they're engaged as employees. So that's the main difference between 2006 and this. So this is a first-time survey like this that we've done of our employees. We had a couple of questions that benchmarked to the 2006, and that had to be that was in employee service motivation. You're a loud typer. So that was there, and those tied in together. But this is kind of a start, and this is something that we would like to then continue on and measure the same kind of questions as we go forward. So what we did was I was lucky enough to be working with Charles Sampson at the Truman School of Public Affairs on getting an intern. I'm going to have him, Jonathan Dudley. But as we were talking about that, we were talking about kinds of work that we would like to do, and somehow I talked him into redoing his syllabus and curriculum for his winter semester class, and this was their main project. And they did it for free, and we also got to use their analysis for free. So it was a really good thing, and then Jonathan's been helping on the back end. So that was a great thing, and they were really engaged and really involved. I went and talked to them for a class period, and they came back with drafts of their questions and worked in the J2E, the Journey to Excellence Committee was the committee that worked to look at the questions, screen those, get it down to a manageable group of things. When I have hot flashes, I stop thinking, so you'll just you'll have to wait for a minute. So that's the process that we went through. We gave Dr. Sampson and the class the 2006 survey results and the survey instrument. We gave him the self-assessment team report. And I think that we will find that the results tied in what we see here is the same kind of thing we saw in that self-assessment when we talked to about 500 employees. And we used our vision and value statement that you all as a group adopted in September to come up with our variables. And so I'll get to some of the charts in a minute, but the variables that we used to measure engagement were communication, our core values and our vision as one, integrity and trust, teamwork, resources, career development, and public service motivation. We had 784 responses. That's about 63% of our employees, our full-time employees. Just to give you a response, that's pretty darn good. Some of those were temporary employees, but not very many. So we had a really good response. It's a difficult time to ask employees how they feel about their work and their employment. Life's not been easy for anybody from top to bottom because we haven't had raises for a couple of years and the economy stinks. So it's a tough time to ask, and I don't think that we got anything that surprises us. When we look at the results. So those were our variables that we used. We measured those variables against ethnicity, gender, age, their tenure in their job, their educational attainment, their job family, and those are our EEO categories, and different jobs are assigned to those families, their employment status, full-time, part-time, that kind of thing, and their department. And so there are numbers for those on I'll get to the pieces. We also had all of the demographic kinds of things. For ethnicity, one of the main finding in that is our workforce population really does reflect pretty much proportional to the racial makeup of the residents of Columbia. That's a really good finding to see that. Gender data, we don't match at all. We're 74% male and 24% female. That has to do with the kind of jobs that we have. We are heavy on labor positions in public works, parks and recreation, and water and light, and there aren't very many women that are interested in doing those jobs. We've not had a female refuse collector for a long time. We've had the females at the sewer wastewater treatment plant before, but in most of the water and light positions, we've never had females in those laboring positions. So the age breakdown, most of our employees are between 32 and 41. The next largest category is 42 and 51. Tenure for our employees, and this is everybody, not just those that answered the question, less than 6 years is 37%. So we've got a rather young group of people. Race, you can see the breakdown there on what we, for the survey, sorry about that, survey participants that did. But as I said, if you look at the census data, our racial makeup does reflect what the city of Columbia has. And then I talked about gender already. These are sideways and impossible to read. Job family membership, and what people are, officials and administrators, there are very few of officials and administrators. That's your department heads, your deputies, at a very high level. Professional, we have a lot of professionals in, like, you're talking about your engineers, your captains and above in the police department, people like that. Technicians are very specialized individuals that do very technical work, and those are generally in our utilities. Protective service includes fire and police and environmental health, people like that, but we're talking police at sergeant and below. Paraprofessional, we have very few paraprofessional member those sorts of things, admin support, skilled craft service, and maintenance. Those are your labor positions. And then some people would just flat did not respond. There were 120 people that didn't tell us what job family they were in because some people were concerned about being identified. This survey was done online, and all of the survey responses went to the university data analysis people. For paper surveys that came, we provided a sealed envelope, and nobody at the city has seen any of these results. So it was completely anonymous. But when we get to the trust thing, you'll see that they don't believe that. Employment status, 619 were full-time, 67 part-time. 29 temporary and seasonal to make up that. For departments where they were employed, obviously Public Works was the biggest responder because they have the most employees. But they were markedly good at responding. As you can see, out of the total, Public Works were 228. That's a good darn number out of one department. I couldn't get all this in one PDF. So survey analysis, that starts on page 13, and this talks about what we measured as we went through two-way communication, and you'll see in those items the actual survey question that ties to that variable. Like when I entered my job, I was given useful information about what it was I had to do, satisfied with the way that my supervisor and I communicate. There's a culture of openness. I know what's expected. I've had recognition. My opinions count. My supervisor listens to me. My job description's accurate. I get my evaluation. Rules, administrative details, and red tape do not make it difficult for new ideas to receive attention. All of our survey responses were on a scale of 1 to 7 to give you on a Likert scale to give you an idea of what they were scored. So for each of the variables, core values and visions, there were a set of survey questions that tied to that we could measure. Some of them measured a couple of things. Core values and vision recognition, my hours of work are sufficient to allow me to have a good family and community life, my coworkers are committed to the goals of my department, I understand my work contributes to the good of the city. There's a goal-setting process I help to shape. My supervisor encourages me to be ethical and honest in completing the task assigned to me. In my daily duties, I can accomplish my tasks easily without breaking rules and regulations, and I'd recommend the city as a good place to work to my family and friends, and we celebrate things like birthdays, anniversaries, and other achievements. In the 2006 survey, one of the things that we could tie back is I would recommend the city of Columbia as a good place to work, and those were both measured well on both of those surveys. So one good thing is when I get to the end of this is that our employees still think that we're a good place to work, and they would recommend us from 2006 to still. Trust, integrity, and leadership questions. In my department, training on customer service is provided. I can easily get guidance when faced with an ethical problem. My immediate supervisor has fair expectations for my performance. City of Columbia's policies for promotion and advancement are fair. My immediate supervisor is consistent. I have trust and confidence in my immediate supervisor. My immediate supervisor seems more concerned that I follow procedures than that I do a good job. In my job, even small matters do not have to be referred to someone higher up for a final answer. I get coaching from my immediate supervisor to help me do a better job. Those were the things to measure trust, integrity, and leadership. Teamwork and workplace culture. The relationship I have with my immediate supervisor helps me to do my job well. The relationship I have with my coworkers allows me to do my job well. I receive helpful feedback on my performance regularly. I'm encouraged to provide excellent customer service. I'm encouraged to work in groups to complete assigned duties. I think it's important to perform at my highest level even if I don't receive recognition. There's a formal process to report and solve problems, and my coworkers are committed to doing good quality work. For resource adequacy, the questions were I have adequate materials and equipment I need to do my job. My department uses its budgeted funds efficiently. My department uses its personnel effectively. We're almost done with our categories, but career development, there's someone at work who encourages me, who encourages my development. I have an opportunity to receive formalized training for my job. My supervisor has talked to me about my career path. I have opportunities at work to learn and grow. I'm encouraged to learn from my mistakes. I'd prefer to work for the city even if offered employment elsewhere. I have authority to change my work processes to get the job done, and it's easy to evaluate success or failure on my job, not in mine. Public service motivation, I like my job because the work is meaningful. I'm proud to work for the City of Columbia. I like my job because it serves the public interest, and I feel satisfied when completing my duties. So I think where we get to the analysis part, job, family, and racial makeup of the workforce, job, family composite scores on page 16. That tells you for job families how those groups of employees feel on all of those variables. And our highest scoring were the people at the top, the officials and administrators. They scored 5.3 as a group on all of those variables. Then professional were the next group, and administrative support. If you look at those with with less satisfaction scores, they're in your technical, paraprofessional, protective service, skill crafts, maintenance. Those are the people who are less engaged. And our overall engagement score was a 4.99. On a 7-point scale, that's not very good. What Dr. Sampson classified as some a culture of engagement is somewhat present. So it's a marginal culture of engagement. I don't think that's surprising given, you know, given the current state of the world. But one of the things that was really telling as we went through these results was that the effective tenure with the city on engagement, and those with less than a year, the new people in town learning their jobs and just coming in, those are the most happy people or most engaged people. I wouldn't say happiness is something that we measure, but the most engaged, they haven't been here very long. And then when the end is in sight, they become more engaged at you know, the 21-plus year people. They can see retirement, and so they seem to be more engaged. But you can see there's a significant drop-off, and particularly for those 6 to 10 year people. So that's a, when I talk about findings, that's pretty much one of the things that we need to think about. What do we need to do to help those people remain engaged? You know, what are the kinds of interventions, and do we need training, whatever. So employment status, the part-timers, and when you look at the number of people that represents, you know, that looks kind of like a big thing, but part-time people are engaged more than full-time. I'm not sure that's a surprise, but then we looked at supervisors and the number of employees supervised. So the only people that answered this were people that do supervise, and the people that don't supervise are less engaged than people that do. And the more you supervise, oddly enough, the more satisfied you are, the more engaged you are. I thought that was kind of interesting, because generally the more you supervise, the less engaged you are, or the harder it is. Educational attainment, this was a kind of an interesting finding. The less than high school group, which there weren't very many of those, but they were very engaged. And then the next groups were those with college degrees or graduate degrees. So your high school, some college associates, were less engaged than the rest of your groups. Then by department, and one of the things that we're going to have as a follow-up on this is to look at departments by different degrees of the answers to the questions, because we're going to look and see who does some things better than others, or where employees are more engaged on the different variables. But none of the departments, you know, we still came in below 5 overall, but the departments that had the highest engagement were small. The Office of Neighborhood Services, Convention and Visitors Bureau, and Economic Development. Those had a higher than what everybody, what that norm was of the 4.99. So they're doing things right, and they're small. So we'll be looking to see what might be significant there.
Some of the column label, or some of the bar labels, are unreadable. I don't know what the third.
I know. We just got this week, and so okay. We haven't gotten back to Dr. Sampson to make changes.
Okay.
The other, you know, the findings. So just to tie up findings and conclusions on what's in there. That starts on page 21, but. The chart here, that's figure 19, and that's on page 22, really gives you by job family all of your variables across there. And you can see where, you know, communication, teamwork, trust, career development, values and vision, public service, and resources. And you can see across those job families each of those areas. And the bottom gives you the mean for all of those things, and you know, our total is like 4.76, but where we do well is public service engagement. That's really where we see the things that are most significant. I'm just scrolling around.
I'm sorry, could you clarify that? What does public and service engagement mean?
That means you're happy about, you feel strongly about the whole idea of public service. There is, in the findings, there's a whole piece of public, on page 21, there's a talk about, on the more positive side in the survey, is good public service motivation. And that is the most, Dr. Sampson, and their finding is that's the most solid positive finding that we had, that the mean was 5.6 out of a 7-point scale.
the base.
Public service motivation is something that people want to work in a public organization. There's a motivation to do that, and it's high for our employees that answered this survey. They're interested in advocating for public policies. They're interested in, for ethical reasons, for social equity, and they're interested in a belief that there's an importance to do public work. So we have a high level of that, and that's good. And we did in 2006, too. But that's our highest one. So that's something to take and build on. Our employees want to be here to serve the public. Where they're not motivated is, and I think, you know, the trust thing is a big one. They're not trustful of management. I think if you want to say that, and I think when we looked at the self-assessment results, we saw the same thing. They don't think that communication is great, where trust was one of the lowest, and they don't think that they have sufficient career development or an engagement, and they don't. The other lowest score is the resources. So Dr. Sampson made a number of recommendations. One of which is, well, you know, figure out what motivates younger employees and work with them and target them. I think that can tie. You know, they seem to be engaged. So what engages them? At the whole Generation Y thing, because people don't stay like they used to. People are not coming here and figuring they're going to stay here. We've got people here that have been 30 years, they're going to be leaving, but the people that are coming in don't look at us as a 30-year opportunity. So how do we get them more invested and want to stay here, and what motivates them? And then we got to figure out those mid-career people. They obviously are the least engaged. What do we need to do for them, and how do we keep them engaged? And part of that, I think, is, you know, goal setting in departments, having a feeling that that there's an open culture in their areas, and they're involved in collaboration and all of those sorts of things, and they have what they need to do the job. One of the things he threw in is that women need more career mentoring, because generally they don't get that. And I think that's a literature from the literature review that they did. Number five was develop a strategic plan and independently institute an external training program. You know, we've started the manager and supervisor training, and we're working on, you know, Mike would like to see a city university and with goals of training for every employee, and maybe that'll help. Two-way communication among supervisors and employees needs to improve. And then, obviously, survey again. He recommends 18 months. But I think that this can be something ongoing with them that they're willing to partner with us on to do. So, you know, there's nothing surprising here in where we started, particularly given the time. But I'm done talking about it if you'd like to ask questions.
I got a couple of questions, and it gets down to the benchmarking. I don't know what these numbers mean in our organization unless I have other cities to compare them to.
I don't know that we've got that.
And maybe it's not available, but and the private sector. I mean, we should not just assume that, well, we're government, we can't match the private sector.
You know we're going to have to figure out how to benchmark it.
Because I think we all understand that if you have an employee working for you in your department that has very low, it's not engaged into the organization, that employee is not going to deliver good customer service. So I think we have a real challenge for administration here, and that is, I think this council would like to see 18 months from now better numbers.
Well, we would like to shoot for at least six.
Right.
Averages. So we need to figure out, you know, what are we going to do to get there?
And I'd also like to know what that means, you know, in comparison with other organizations. I don't want to set the standard so high that it's unreachable. But on the other hand, you know, I expect this organization to be a high-performing organization, you know, substantially higher than normal organization as governments go. And I think it should match private sector engagement.
So we will search out ways to.
That's all we're asking.
See how we can benchmark those things. Other questions?
This is a very interesting time because there is such staff turnover, and that must create a lot of uncertainty for staff, especially staff that intend to stay here. And I thought one of the most interesting results was that young people, you said that young people coming in are not necessarily looking to stay here. And I think I'm going to conjecture that the people who have been here 20, 30 years came here with the intention to stay. And there is something different. And I think, I imagine the University of Missouri has the same deal. When my father came here to teach, he was expected to stay. And when you talk to a lot of young faculty now, they've already got their eye on the next place, North Carolina or wherever else the money might be better, whatever. So I don't know. It is an interesting time because you talked at the one of the early work sessions, you talked about the training to bring people up to the next level, and if there's career advancement, I think that would be quite helpful in terms of building morale as opposed to bringing in new people from outside on top of the people that have been here all these years. Also, I'm curious how carefully you broke this up among the full-time regular versus the temporary and seasonal workers. I saw that in a couple of places, but having been a temporary worker for the city, I can say that the temporary workers are rather dragged through the mud, and it's all in the name of keeping headcount down. And I think when we look at a solution to the pension system and we're looking at creating yet another two-tier system, we ought to consider the implications of that. And I would, in particular, say that the survey crew is a group that was treated particularly badly, and they're on for 9 months, and then they're let go, and they have to go find private sector work, and then, of course, they're replaced with somebody else from private sector. It's just a vicious circle, and all in the name of keeping headcount down, we're making people's careers very difficult. So I don't know if that, if you want to look at the temporary workers in particular. The seasonal may be a different deal because those may be people who want to come on just for the summer.
We have a lot of seasonal employees, but yeah, it would be interesting.
Those temporary workers in particular, if it's just to keep headcount down to satisfy the bean counters, I don't think that's a great idea.
We'll look at those and see if we can break them out.
One last thing. Go ahead, Barbara. Oh.
I was just going to say the good news is the high public service engagement, and it seems to me that working on all those other issues in terms of management, communication, employee valuing can interact with that, so there's a lot of potential.
I think so. Improvement. Yeah. I think there's a pretty much a map to what we need to work on, but the fact that they are engaged and want to be here because it is public service is a good thing.
Right.
I'll point out again that there is a connection between the public perception of police service as being something that they view as important and are less satisfied with than the national average in Missouri, Kansas national average, and the correlation with the police department's engagement numbers being the lowest of the departments. Now, we've had administrative turnover, and it's incumbent on administration to turn those numbers around, because I don't think you can improve one without the other.
I think it does correlate. You're right.
Well, on the police issue, I think in the last year or two, there's been a lot of changes, improvement, reorganization with the police department, the professionalism, and so that creates a little bit of uncertainty and dissatisfaction as you go through that improvement process, too. So that's something to consider.
Change can be hard, and no matter if it improves effectiveness of the whole team, it can still be hard in many ways. You know, these numbers aren't surprising, especially in the history of this organization. About 3 years worth now of trimming around the edges, but what it means is, you know, less
equipment replacement, for example, so our tools are getting older, no raises for a couple of years, you would sort of expect engagement to go down. So I'm not too surprised about that. However, I agree completely with what you've said. It is a concern, and a lot of this can be helped by a tone I can set, and that's great public service and professionalism. My focus is going to be fairness and predictability as we move forward. I really believe in equity, and I think that will have an impact on these numbers in the future.
Really wonderful that we are doing this to look out for our employees, and I'm wondering if Bob has any comments about how much this has been done at the at Boone Hospital as an example of a private employer.
Sorry, say that.
Are surveys like this done at Boone Hospital where and with
employment? Employment. They survey, as I said, it's a list of metrics. One of which is employee engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And it is surveyed contemporaneously and dynamically, and it's surveyed across their whole system.
Mm-hmm.
So on a month-to-month basis, they follow the mm-hmm. changes. And in that way, they can interact if there is a drop-off. I mean, a change may occur because a construction project has made people inconvenienced. But at least they want to find out why. That's the way the private sector works. Again, the challenge for a city is that you've got 30 different organizations doing very different things. But I think that's the way we satisfy our customers, and we need to make sure that our employees, you know, are fully engaged, satisfied, and validated. You know, I view the beat, the cop on the beat, got a tough job, but he's impacted by what he believes is his validation or her validation from above. Mm-hmm. You know, how well is he or she being taken care of by the supervisors, by the administrators above them. So I think that we set the tone, the city manager sets the tone, and the police chief sets the tone. So I'm glad to see a commitment to review this in 18 months. Again, I'd like to make sure that we're not setting unrealistic expectations. You know, I'd like to know where we stand across the organization. As an anecdote, you need to know where you stand. I have seen a situation where customer service got high enough that the bonuses were set on raising the bar percent above that to a point where they were unattainable, which affected employee engagement. So it goes both ways. I mean, it's like how do you grade kids in school? You know, you want them to feel like they have a chance, but you want them to be and you want them to be validated. So I think that's the complexity of what you have to deal with. So, but I think I really like to see this pathway. I think it's really good.
Session 2, vision update. Paula Hertwig Hopkins, Assistant City Manager, has led the city's vision process since its inception in 2006 and will provide us with an update.
Pause for us for a couple moments here. Thank you. Okay. It is my great pleasure to introduce Jan Weaver, who's the chair of the Columbia Vision Commission, and this is your Vision Commission. You make the appointments to this commission. She's been on this commission since it was first legislated by the council in 2009. So she's been with it from the very beginning. I want to take this opportunity to personally thank Jan and the commission for their hard work, their diligence, their patience, and their focus in carrying out the vision work and bringing it forward. Please recognize Jan in this PowerPoint presentation, the information that she's presenting, for her analytical, her data-oriented, organizational, and facilitation skills in meeting all of the reporting requirements of the Vision Commission ordinance. One of the most recent documents included in your retreat materials is the draft recommendations on vision implementation steps dated May 24th, 2011. that is currently out there for a 30-day public comment period, a required commission report that has reviewed the current status of vision implementation, and their recommendations or their proposals of specific new implementation tasks to be considered by council for the next 2 years. Again, please welcome Jan. I have a high regard for her. I've worked closely with her, but she really has been driving the bus and taking a huge document and meeting all the requirements of actually a fairly complicated vision ordinance. So, Jan, it's yours.
Well, thanks. I hope I can live up to that introduction. We owe a lot to the commission itself, the members who participated in putting this together, so I want to give them my thanks, and also Paula's ability to access the city staff and get them to respond to my requests. So it's definitely been a joint effort. I usually like to start PowerPoint presentations by showing people the whole thing, all the slides all together. I think it reduces the anxiety a little bit about how long it's going to take to get through it. So I'm just going to, also I'm a Mac person, I'll tell you that right now. So just going to slide through. There's 24 slides all together, and when we get to these, we're near the end. Okay, so you kind of know what to expect. So now I need to
slideshow. Right.
Okay, and
look at it again.
Like I said, I'm Mac, so
what?
The top right corner.
Right there.
Sorry, top left corner.
Top left corner. This?
He did.
Okay, well, anyway, it starts off with what is a vision, and this is the slideshow that I put together for taking out into the community. So I wanted to start with what is a vision, so in an effort to get everybody on the same page. So it's shared values, goals, and plans of participating individuals for a community or institution to be accomplished within a certain time period. They are works in progress. And they are the combined responsibility of all members of a community, whether individually or as part of an agency, institution, business group, or government. And then I have some examples, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that the government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. That's a really big vision accomplished. Opportunity and equity for those most in need, that's from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And free market solutions for social and economic problems, Heartland Institute. That's just to give you an idea. It's, visions are big. Okay, next.
Just the arrow.
Thank you.
Okay.
Get off that?
Get off of that.
Great.
The arrow.
All right, so our vision was also big, but in the sense that it had lots of moving parts. There are 13 topic groups. I'm not going to read all the stuff on this page because it would be tedious. I just want to kind of use this as a visual to emphasize the diversity of ideas that people brought to the visioning process. So there was arts and culture, community character, community facilities and services, community pride and human relations, development, downtown, economic development, education, environment, governance and decision-making, health, social services, and affordable housing, parks, recreation, greenways and trails, and transportation. And you can see that within those 13 topic groups, there were sub-goals, sometimes as many as 10 in some cases for each of the topic groups. It's a large, diverse, complex, interacting vision. Okay, so this is the informal version of the vision. Columbia will be more arts-friendly, prettier, better served, more responsible and culturally sensitive, better planned, hipper, wealthier, smarter, greener, better governed, healthier physically and mentally, more accessible, outdoorsier, and with more transportation alternatives sometime in the next 5 years. So that's a short version of the vision. But again, you can see how diverse the ideas were that people brought to the table. And the challenge has been to track all those different visions in kind of one package. Okay, who has to be involved in implementing the vision? Okay, obviously, city government and staff. They have to take lead on most of the vision strategies that were suggested by the people who participated in the vision, just because they have the resources and the authority to put these things into place. Also, county government and staff, so interaction between city and county is important. Columbia Public Schools, they have a huge chunk with education. Local colleges and universities, the business community, the Chamber of Commerce and READY, social service agencies, local houses of worship, local nonprofits, individual citizens, and just because I wanted to be thorough, others, whoever I didn't include on that list. This is a timeline of the visioning. So in the fall or winter of 2006, there were large public meetings that identified the 13 topic groups, and the vision committee members were selected. And that was the group of people who moved the visioning forward. The two co-chairs were Jeffrey Williams and Diane Drainer. In winter, spring, and summer of 2007, there were separate topic group meetings to develop more specific goals, identify stakeholders, and propose implementation steps. So understand you had the big meetings in that fall-winter period, and the 13 topic groups were identified, and then there were smaller meetings that following year for each of the topic groups, and anybody could participate in any of those topic groups. Then in fall, winter 2007, there was a community choices workshop to share the results of the topic group meetings. So what they did was they had big posters with the plans on them, and the public was invited to come and indicate what their priorities were in terms of the visioning. We got five dots or something like that, and you could assign them to different topic groups. Then in spring and summer of 2008, the city hired a consultant to take all that information and explore consolidating the topics and goals and proposing implementation steps for the first 2 years of vision implementation. And that was motivated by the concern that 13 was a pretty large number to keep track of, and the idea was for the consultant to kind of find groupings that would make more sense. In fall and winter of 2008, the council approved an ordinance setting up the Vision Commission to track and measure implementation of the vision and appointed the commissioners. And then in winter of 2009, the commission was convened. However, instead of using the consultant's approach of grouping topics, the commission decided to use the original 13 topic groups, goals, strategies, et cetera, and tracking and monitoring, rather than the consultant's consolidated approach. This was a unanimous decision on the part of the commission, but it meant that for the last 2 years, we've kind of been following two tracks. So there's one set of implementation recommendations that the city has been keeping track of, and in the meantime, the commission has been looking at the strategies and goals of the visioning process and been using that to evaluate progress on the vision. So we're hoping now in this next two-year period to bring those two streams back together. Spring, summer, and fall of 2009, the commission developed its reporting format and its work plan for tracking and measuring the 13 topics, 49 sub-goals, and 149 performance measures. We call them action or implementation steps. And we submitted the first report in 2010 and progress on those 149 performance measures. And understand, again, this is going to be separate from the vision tracker that the city has been using because they were using the consultant recommendations on implementation. So we have a separate list, but I believe you got a table that aligned or looked at the alignment between what the consultant was doing and the commission was doing. So there is a fair amount of overlap. And it also convened meetings with representatives from governance, education, pride, and human relations, and parks. And then we did some off-the-cuff meetings with people. Spring 2011, we submitted our recommendations for the next two-year round of implementation. So that's been the timeline. If you have any questions in the course of this presentation, please feel free to interrupt me.
I have a quick question. I'm just wondering what the issue was with the not following the consolidated approach, the consultant's recommendation. And you said that was a unanimous committee decision?
Yes. I think that coming on, the commissioners wanted to be really true to the original vision. And they felt, and even though that consolidation was a great idea, because, you know, honestly, if you asked me to name all 13 topics, I could not do it without looking at the list. There was concern that in the process of consolidation, you might end up dropping something that some members of topic groups thought were really important. So we just decided to go back to the original document.
Yes, I would support that. I've participated peripherally in a few of the visioning things that I was invited to, and I would also imagine too that you have different data than the consultant has, and so you, I'm going to conjecture that you picked what worked for you based on how you're looking at things. That's sort of an open-ended
question. Well, initially, and this I would say would be one of our guiding principles. We didn't want to favor, and we didn't want to have the perception that we were favoring any topic, sub-goal, or strategy over any other. That's why we've got all 149, and that's why we're just looking to see whether or not there's been any progress on those steps. Mm-hmm. So we weren't, and I'm not suggesting that the consultant was doing that, but we were concerned that we have not just the reality, but the perception of following everything that people who participated in the visioning process recommended.
Yeah.
So everything that was there and nothing that wasn't.
Yeah, I understand that, and I would concur for whatever that's worth.
Well, I think it's possible that going forward we may, as we become more familiar with it, get comfortable with groupings, but newbies, we felt we ought to stick mm-hmm. to the plan. Any other questions about that? Okay, our charge, and obviously I've summarized from the ordinance, but it's to track, measure, and report on the progress of visioning implementation to the community. Coordinate with other governmental boards, commissions, departments, and non-governmental entities. Make recommendations about implementation tasks every 2 years following consultation with other relevant entities. Do public outreach and education on the visioning process. Track the groups involved in visioning and recruit a diverse participant base. Convene public dialogues at 5-year intervals beginning in 2014 to review the vision and progress in implementation. Okay, this is from the executive summary of our first report. We developed preliminary performance measures. That's just indicators of community efforts, and I've moved away from that language because I have to spend a lot of time explaining it, but it just means, has there been any action? For each of the 13 vision topics and 49 subtopic goals of the vision report. And we gathered at least some data on the beginning or completion of more than 130 of the 149 performance measures. Based on this preliminary information, we thought there was good progress. In other words, 75% completed or started steps on arts and culture, community services and facilities, and health, social services, and affordable housing. So what we mean by this is when we looked at the strategies or action steps recommended by people who are participated in the visioning process, we saw that 75% or more of the steps that they had recommended were in progress. Making adequate progress, so 25 to 74% of steps were started or completed. We saw that on community character, development, the downtown, environment, and governance. And making little or no progress, education. And then we hadn't gathered enough data on community pride and human relations, economic development, or parks, recreation, greenways, and trails to evaluate their progress. Yes?
I had a question regarding education and the charge of the commission. Has the commission met with the school board? And
We had a meeting with we haven't met with the school board, but we had a meeting on education last summer where a lot of these issues were discussed. Mainly the focus of that discussion was on facilities. And then we are aware of efforts that the school board has made in the last couple of weeks in terms of addressing the disparity in student scores, which is of major concern to people in the community. So this was where we were at in 2010. And I will just repeat that this is in progress, and I expect that at the end of this meeting, people are going to contact me and say, how come you've got that marked as nothing happening when we've been working on it for 18 months? And I would just apologize and say I wasn't as good about tracking things down as I needed to be, and I welcome any input that anybody can provide about our progress.
Well, actually, Jan, it ties in with the public comment period you have right now until June 24th.
Yes, it does. But I'm sure we're all aware of the relative effectiveness of public comment periods. It's not until the, you know, pedal hits the metal that you really start to get people reacting to what you've said. So we're always open to correction. Okay, in the spring commission report, and you have a draft, but I'm hoping to have a more comprehensive draft. We have three measures of progress on the vision that we hope to include in our reporting. One is the efforts, and that's formally performance measures, and that's just, has anybody been doing anything? And if it's blue, so they're listed for each of the topics in the subsequent slides. If it's blue, it's completed or significantly underway. And by that we mean it's moving forward under its own momentum. It doesn't need any attention from us, as far as we know, other than just like checking in on it. Black, there's modest effort or not enough information, and that might require us rechecking on it regularly or poking somebody. And red is little or no effort as far as we know, and that is most of the red make up the implementation recommendations that we have submitted for public comment and for council consideration. The second measure is results. So it's one thing to take an action. It's the next thing to see whether or not it's had an effect. And we're still really working on that. But that's what the numbers say about progress: graduation rates, average wage, employment rate. And we've included some examples for some of the topics. This is still at a very early stage. And then significant events, events that affect progress on the vision, either positively or negatively. And that was our effort to help people understand that it's a system and that something happening in community, some big event, can affect different parts of the vision in different ways and help people start thinking about it like that, not in isolation. So we've got the IBM coming to Columbia, the Missouri Theater, and the East Area Plan as examples of what that would look like. Okay, so arts and culture. So you see blue. Again, that means that things are underway and don't appear to need a lot of our assistance, with the possible exception of needs assessment. And then the results, we're thinking about the percent of arts employments, or the number of people, or the percentage of people in Columbia employed in the arts. And what I've got here, that this little line is called a spark line. And all it's intended to do is to show you the trend. I've included the range of the data from 2001 to 2008 and the starting value and the ending value. So in 2001, 0.86% of employed Colombians were employed in the arts. And in 2008, it was 0.66%. And we chose this measure, for example, because if we have a strong arts community, we would have more people making a living at it. I don't know how many would be an appropriate number to aim for. We're just picking this as a possible number. And again, I welcome suggestions about data sources or things to measure in order to tell whether we're having an impact.
I hate to get too specific in a meeting of this format, but there must be all kinds of people who are employed elsewhere but active in the arts, you know, amateur artists and so forth, who contribute a lot to this community. And I don't know, maybe this is too specific to get into at this point, but I'm just wondering if your measures look at that.
I think that's a very good point. I'm aware that a lot of people do art on the side or as a part-time job, but nobody collects that data. And one of the things we're trying to do is ensure that we're using data sets that are already being collected and don't entail any additional cost to the city. Now, it's possible that, say, the Arts and Culture Commission, is that right? I know there's a commission that deals with it, that they might, over time, start collecting data that would help reflect that kind of part-time, temporary, volunteer participation in the arts.
Measure sales or displays. You say, again, I don't want to get too technical here. You're really to be commended to for making an effort to quantify something that's inherently unquantifiable, and this is really a marvelous achievement.
Well, I have to give credit to Merrick for collecting the economic data. That's where I got it from. And see, again, that's the value. I agree. Another thing might be looking at businesses whose primary function is to serve the arts community. But we also are considering what is the cost of collecting that data. And right now, we've just chosen to use free data sets.
You do the best you can with what you have.
With what you have.
You're to be commended.
Thank you. But I'll certainly take it under advisement, and I welcome suggestions about how to measure things that don't cost any money. Okay. Community character, mostly blue. So that shows that in terms of the strategies or action steps recommended in the visioning, that it looks like there's significant progress. We do think that, so if I go to the red here, a landscape board and streetscape plan, I know there are bits and pieces of that, but that might be something, or that is something we need progress in. And same thing with the gateway plan. And then the stuff in black, utilities underground and business loop in Providence cleaned up, I think that might take more stepping back and looking at that in terms of other aspects of community development. Feel free to ask any questions. I'm probably just going to highlight the red things.
I was going to mention on the gateway plan, a couple years ago we had a consultant come in and do gateway plan planning and public meetings, and we came up with the results of what we should do, and then never had the money to move forward.
So you're suggesting there's a plan, or you're saying there's a plan, but there's no...
Haven't done
okay.
It.
Who would I talk to about...
Tony St. Romain.
I think... Not the prohibitive part, it was the cost of maintaining it, and so... there has been some community interest in the last year or so with Larry Potterfield, who I think most of you know with Midway Arms, and he is very interested in implementing some gateway improvements, at least on the east side of town, and using maybe some of his peer pressure to work with others in the development community to sponsor perhaps an east gateway and a north gateway and a south gateway. So we have been talking to him. He is very interested in providing some hardscape elements that might be installed and maintained by our Parks and Recreation. So that process is moving forward, and hopefully it'll be something that won't cost a lot to maintain, but will still be very attractive and provide that gateway that we really need into our community.
Thank you. I'll keep going. But I made a note of that, so I'll be talking to you. Community facilities and services. Most of the steps are, it looks like, yes, we've seen significant progress in all of the steps. We feel like they're ticking over on their own, and it's just a matter of keeping track of it. And we can focus more on the measuring the results part of it. And so we have the percent satisfaction with police. That's from the community survey. So I haven't seen the most recent one. I don't know what the numbers are. 76% to 74% between 2003 and 2007. Again, we just have the spark lines. If and when people say this is the goal we want, we can add that to the trend line so that we know how we're doing in terms of meeting that specific vision. Community pride and human relations. So the things that are outstanding on that are a plan for a shared facility. Youth champion, we need to go back and talk to the people in community pride and human relations to figure out what they meant about that. City employee training and community events like Spark in the Park or trading places. So those are the things that we want to kind of look at more closely. Oh, and again, in addition to a youth champion, a community champion, we're not sure quite what the Community Pride and Human Relations Topics Group meant by this. Did they mean the mayor? Did they mean people on the council? So we have to figure out what's going on with them. So some of the recommendations we made were to ourselves to do more research. Development. Okay, the things that are outstanding are the identification of neighborhood districts. And this is important because that gets at how resources in the city are allocated, because there is the perception that some neighborhoods, ill-defined as they are, do not do as well in terms of access to city resources as other neighborhoods. So we need the neighborhood districts, and that was in the Metro 2020 standards. And then we can look at how resources are allocated among those districts to get some sense of, is there equity in the costs and benefits of allocating resources?
Yes. Who did you envision, or who or how did you envision these districts being defined? Some of them define themselves, such as North Central, and they form a neighborhood association, and others don't. And as we know from looking at the association map, which is largely self-selected, there are holes and overlaps, and I don't know. I guess that's my question, is who would do this or how would it happen?
Well, Metro 2020 actually had guidelines for how neighborhood districts should be established. Mm-hmm. And if I had my druthers, I'd pitch it to planning. And it might be that they would use the 2020 guidelines, but they might also take into account the self-selection that's going on in neighborhood areas.
It seemed to me you'd have to take in the self-selection a little bit so you don't get into the mess that the British made when they divided up the Middle East without consulting the Middle Easterners.
I definitely think that consulting neighborhoods would be a key part of setting up the neighborhood districts. But it's also looking at terms of the resources and the infrastructure. So where do the streets go and how does that affect, you know, are there grocery stores? What's the sewer system like? So, and again, the commission doesn't intend to do that itself. It intends to hand that off, if the council approves, to a city department that's got the expertise to do that. Again, the goal of this is, it is mainly to look at the resource allocation issue. And there may be other ways to do it.
Yeah, resource allocation and planning. For example, if there should be neighborhood markets, that once you define your neighborhoods, you know whether there's a market in it.
Yeah, or, you know, it. And it could maybe some correlation with, I've thought in terms of elementary schools.
Yeah, I agree. That's good.
I think council can play a role in that also, because I think each person here representing a ward can subdivide their ward into cohesive units. I know for the sixth ward, I could identify 10 cohesive sort of units and pretty much cover the sixth ward, and that might make a logical district too, in consultation with planning and the planning mm-hmm. department.
And you were thinking planning as opposed to neighborhood services, but
I think it would involve probably more than one city department, possibly the public school system.
I don't know. I hate to harp on this, but this seems like a huge thing that could really help a lot. So
it could be a huge thing. Oh, but helping us?
At helping a lot of things for a lot of people.
Yes, I agree. I'd love to see this one done. But that's just a personal opinion. Mm-hmm. That doesn't come from the commission.
Just keep in mind, planning is going to be a little busy, I think, with the comp plan.
That's why I was thinking of neighborhood services, because yeah. They're out there doing that. And Barbara's right. See, when I knock on every door in my district, I learn something about places that I hadn't visited before necessarily. And, you know, so we have a different insight into our ward than maybe we used to. And neighborhood services is another group that walks all the streets, and so do the police.
But I'm also thinking in terms of the comprehensive plan task force that this mm-hmm. integrates well with some of what they're doing. And again, yeah. I would urge looking at the Metro 2020 plan to see, you know, that was public effort put into addressing some of these questions, so it'd be good to go back and maybe look at that and see.
Was the Metro 2020 plan done in 2000?
If anybody can help me on that.
2001, yeah.
And it would help address the perception that that was another one of those public efforts that got shelved if people looked at the 2020 plan.
Right. Whether or not it's been sitting on the shelf for 19 years, it might still have useful information.
Yep. Possibly. And then the resources allocated by ratings. And then lead incentives for buildings. And that's just the idea that if a building is LEED certified or some other green certification program, that there might be possible incentives in planning approval that would help encourage businesses to do that. Downtown, we have a question about the Modessa Governing Board. I just haven't been able to track down anything on that. And barriers reduced. Again, I probably need to talk to the downtown topic group to find out what they meant by that. But everything else looks like it's moving forward.
Sorry, over
yes.
here. What is Modessa?
Super TIF, Tony. It's the Missouri, I'm not sure what all the vernacular stands for.
The Downtown mm-hmm. Leadership Council has taken a look at and is still exploring the idea of a TIF district. Modessa, as Paul said, is kind of like a super TIF, and it doesn't look like it will work.
That's right. Is this the one that we applied for it about 2 or 3 years ago for something downtown?
We've never applied
Modessa's
for it.
Modessa typically work in cities that border other states like Kansas City, St. Louis, because you really have to count the amount of traffic coming into the city that you can pull mm-hmm. in from outside your community. So Modessa doesn't work very well in Columbia at all.
And isn't it Modessa also, it defines a bigger area, a larger area? Tony, defines a larger area as being a TIF area. Isn't that also characteristic of a Modessa?
That is true.
Instead of specific projects, it's a whole area that's defined as being a TIF area.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just learned a whole lot more about Modessa than I knew when I walked into the room. So.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks for that clarification, if that's what it was.
Move me further along. Okay, economic development. The things that are outstanding are the additional airline and destination city. And, I don't want anybody to take this personally when something's red. I feel like this is a really challenging visioning goal or sub-goal that people had, and especially in this economy. It's just that was on the list, so that's why it's on our list. Decent wage and benefits planned for. So there's been a lot of focus on bringing employment opportunities to Columbia, but one of the things that the people who participated in economic development wanted to see was some sense of what constitutes a fair wage. What do you need to make in Columbia to have a good quality of life? So that's something that we have a recommendation for. Science and technology was a huge component of the economic development vision. So we need some criteria for comparing the I-70 corridor to other research areas. You know, are we aiming for a research triangle, or can we, you know, is there something that's more reasonable in terms of what we can accomplish in mid-Missouri? And then the high-tech high school. And then, excuse me. Examples of results, the Columbia Airport emplanements. So this is the data from 2001 to 2009. The starting value is 34,000. It went down, but it's coming back up to 25,000. So in terms of showing the trend, there was a downward trend, but it appears to be recovering. And then net jobs in professional science and technical services. And again, I got this from Merrick Data, which is the Missouri Economic something, 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 but they collect this. It's the same source as for the arts employment, mm-hmm. 2003 to 2009. And this is the net jobs. So they went from five, thank you very much, new jobs, net jobs. So we added jobs, but jobs were subtracted in this field. And I thought the net jobs was going to be the more representative number, and it went up a little bit, and then we had a net professional science and technical services jobs of 14 in 2009.
It's a net gain of
net gain
14 jobs.
Yeah, in 2009.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's very small.
It does seem small. So, but again, I welcome suggestions about what to look at or what to measure in terms of how we're accomplishing our goals. And I picked that because we wanted to, the vision was that we'd be some kind of tech corridor.
Mm-hmm. So, well, if it includes MU, they may have enough job loss or job stagnation that would cause that.
Yeah, that's quite true. I didn't dig into the data at all.
You also have to compare it against the national data, which was a disaster in 2009. So
that's true. The fact
any
that
gain is probably pretty good.
The fact that it has a plus anything is probably good.
Yeah, so one of the things I need to look at is what kind of comparisons do we make to background data? Do we do it nationally? Do we look at comparable cities? Mm-hmm. And, again, I'd welcome any suggestions about that.
And that doesn't include the IBM jobs, which were...
No, because this just goes to 2009.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it also doesn't include any job losses we had in 2010. So, education. It's not as red as it would have been last year. But there are still... So the things that are outstanding is some kind of community educational facilities commission. And that was the idea that there be a commission, not necessarily... the responsibility of the city alone, but the idea that somebody be looking at facilities in the city for youth, and not just for formal schooling, but for non-formal schooling. So that was really the substance of our large conversation last summer. There aren't enough places for kids to go and do healthy, productive things. That was a perception of the people.
And part. You're talking about kids here, not adults.
Kids, or, yes. Yes. An educational resource coordinator.
And what does that mean?
Somebody to keep track of the resources that are available. Look, for example, compiling a list of places where any kind of program that needs after-school space could meet. So it could be a list of school gyms. It could be a list of church halls. But somebody to kind of keep track of what those space resources are in town.
And did the committee have an idea of what organization or entity would support that person?
No. As I recall from that topic group, they weren't sure where the funding would come from. But I can tell you that the representation on that education topic group was generally individuals from the public school system. There was a few other folks there that were not representative, but most of them were for the public school system. But I do not recall any discussion, Fred, of who is going to fund it. But they clearly saw it as being an umbrella person, like Jan said, that would track all of the educational resources throughout the entire community, public and private, actually.
I'd like to speak to you at lunch about that. I have some ideas and some questions, but I think that's important.
Okay, then under curriculum and programs, needs assessment of at-risk kids. There are data, but nobody's analyzed what it is they need to be less at risk. A coordinating coalition that organizes an annual conference for all educators. And Columbia Public Schools makes volunteering or service learning mandatory. Currently, there's no requirement for service learning. And then the... I mean, there's obviously lots of educational data. The one that is what several people recommended as the best indicator was how third graders were doing on communication arts. And this is the African-American third grade communication arts proficiency scores. And it was 21% in 2006 and 16% in 2009. So I would say even if we don't have all the markers on here, the trend is going in the wrong direction for this group.
Does communication arts mean English?
Yeah, that's what it means. But it's so reading, writing, and oral communication.
And it would be neat to get a more formal report that has the data behind these graphs.
I can do that.
Okay.
Yes. environment, kind of all over the map here. So there's a lot of blue indicating that there's significant progress. But there's also a fair amount of red and some black. So there's an ICMA, International City County Management Association, conference for developers. And the ICMA conference is aimed at conveying useful environmental information to people in the building and development field. Natural Resources Committee that prepares an annual report on air, water, land, and aesthetics. There is no Natural Resources Committee. I think in our recommendation we wanted to hand that off to the Environment Committee. I don't recall off the top of my head, but just somebody who would be issuing an annual report on the state of the environment. An environmental curriculum. It wasn't clear if this was supposed to be a city or a Columbia Public Schools task. An ordinance requiring bars and restaurants to recycle. Incentives for environmentally based businesses. Again, this would be something similar to the recommendations we have of or some incentive for LEED buildings. That the chamber uses the annual Economic Outlook Conference to educate on energy use. And that there be a citywide education program on energy for all sectors. So this relates back to the environmental curriculum. So those will be components of our recommendations. And then in terms of measuring progress on the environmental quality, I pulled out the data on the percent of samples from the Hinkson that showed that it fully supported biological life. And from 2001 to 2006, so it was 50% of samples showed fully biologically supporting in 2001, and 67% showed fully supporting biological life in 2006. There's no data after 2006. I think this is important because this is the data that's driving the EPA's decisions regarding stormwater.
Are you short of time, or can you take a question?
I can take a, I've got to noon, right? Yeah, I think I can. I can talk faster at the end.
Till noon.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. The thing that's interesting is I'm going to diverge into national policy, international policy. The reason that the Chinese are beating us in solar technology is their government is supporting their solar industries, whereas our government more or less dropped our solar industries after domestic solar industry after 2008 or 9. And you know, we can't solve the world's problems, but we can support things like that here where possible. And so hopefully one of these red things will turn green, and we can at least support local solar projects and things like that where it's economic. And the Chamber Economic Outlook Conference is one of my favorite events, and it would be great to expand that. It's really sort of a short afternoon, you know, sort of a medium-long afternoon. It would be great to expand that if we could work with them.
I can't say for certain that all of the red have turned into recommendations for the next two-year period. I think most of them had. So
you beat me to it then.
Yeah,
thanks.
Governance and decision making. The things that are outstanding are an oversight entity to review commissions, et cetera. The idea was, I think it was, if I likened it to the university, it'd be a committee on committees. Like, is this commission accomplishing what it was intended to accomplish? Is it time to retire the commission, expand the commission, give the commission more resources, change its charge?
If I can just interject, this is on the agenda tomorrow. So, We will touch on this subject again.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Council involved in department head searches and council involved in department head evaluations. And I'd say just that there appeared to be strong pushback from the public about this. So it's on the list of things to address at some point. Though they were recommendations from the people who did the governance topic. And the diversity plan, as far as I know, was not current. It could be I couldn't find a current plan on. Okay. Okay. I'll talk to you. Okay. So I couldn't tell where we were with that.
Isn't the charter quite clear that we hire the city manager and the clerk only? I mean, wouldn't it be a charter change to start meddling with the department?
Yeah, I think that was the concern.
That's one of many concerns that seems to me to be a showstopper right there. It's against the law.
Unless you change the charter.
Let's not.
I'm just saying. I was not on this topic group. This comes from people who were really involved in governance. That's
Let me echo what Jan just said. These are not goals, statements, jump starts, action plans that came from the commission. It came from citizens well over, you know, close to the whole process, close to 1,000 mm-hmm. people that actually brought these up in all these different topic groups. And this really is the language. There's very concern of honoring the language and what they were actually saying. So she's the messenger.
Okay.
I take your point. And we have had things where we've said this can't be done, it's not possible, the timing's wrong, or, you know, we've completely rolled right past that. So that's the situation. And this is something we need to put a tag on.
Sorry to spend time on that, but I thought it was important.
And just a note, we also hire and review the municipal judge. The council does directly.
Just a quick comment on that. Similar to the discussions you've been having with the workforce survey and the citizen survey, that the context, the timing of when these topic groups took place, there was a higher level, I would say at that time, a higher level of distrust between members of the community, our population, our community, and perhaps the city government at large. So having sat in off and on many of these as an observer, I can tell you that's what they're saying, but the substance is distrust, perception, what are they really saying, and what do they really mean?
That is a really good point. So things might have changed so that it's not as critical an issue. Annual summary of high-level interactions between the city and the county, and quarterly city-county commission meetings. Health and social services and affordable housing, mostly blue. I need to track down whether there's an annual program review. I think there is a nonprofit that's aimed at developing affordable housing. At least there's been discussion of such a thing. Diabetes education and prevention, and a health literacy campaign. And I think those, we made some recommendations about, you know, having a gateway on the website. The trend is not good. Diabetes deaths per 100,000 has climbed, so we want to see that one come down, at least in terms of visioning.
And just on the last slide, quarterly city, county commission meetings. For the last several years, we have generally been meeting both with the county and the school board regularly.
Semi-annually.
Right, semi-annually, and then actually the manager's office is meeting on a much more regular basis with the public school and the county, and almost, I think, monthly. We have been doing that.
Yeah, I was aware that individual staff were talking to each other more, but I think there was also the concern that the commissions actually get faced.
Yeah, well, we had formally been meeting.
Okay. So I changed that one to blue. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Great. I love turning things to blue. Okay. Any questions about this one? Okay. Parks is going along pretty well. The only thing is an acquisitions agent to facilitate acquisitions of green space. And that goes along with a lot of things involved in, you know, not spending just city money, but looking for grants and private donors to acquire park or green space.
Is the acquisition, I'm not exactly sure what you mean by acquisitions agent. The city has some sort of right-of-way.
No, this would be somebody who would go out identify properties, negotiate costs, find sources of funding.
And that's not what Wendy Lister does?
I don't know.
Something different.
John, you want to comment on that?
Yes, Wendy does go out and buy right-of-way for the city for all departments, but I believe this was for green space, to identify green space and figure out a way to get it. But she does purchase right-of-way for the departments.
Okay, thanks.
Park volunteer hours as an indicator of public engagement in parks, 19,000 in 2003, 17,000 in 2009, so a slight downward trend, but it's coming back up from a dip. And transportation, mostly blue, because a lot involves planning. Large traffic generators identified and a plan for minimizing their impacts is implemented. I would hope that this is something that the Comprehensive Plan Task Force would be considering. And then a protocol for evaluating connections and gaps in services and the information used in decision making. So how do we decide whether there's a gap in a service kind of thing? And okay, close to the end, the IBM deal. So if it's blue, that our take on it was that it was generally positive for that particular vision topic, and if it's red, maybe pushing it in the other direction. So the IBM deal was positive for the development, economic development, and environment and education. We anticipated a negative impact on traffic because adding to the transportation needs, a negative impact on the environment for stormwater and governance and decision making. There was a strong public perception about a lack of transparency in the decision making process. The Missouri Center for the Arts, that's just been kind of a downer all around. It was a loss of a major venue. The unused space may affect downtown neighborhoods and create blighted areas. It could put a city block out of commission and affect the vibrancy and hipness of downtown. And it could have an impact on economic development of cultural venues in the downtown area. And then the Columbia East Area Plan, the joint planning and more transparency were goals of that, so that was that helped the governance and decision making. The planning could help keep city services from being overextended, so that was good for community facilities and services. It helped the transportation infrastructure planning. Environment was a consideration of the planning in order to minimize the impact on, say, streams. It helped development. It should help with development concerns like open space infrastructure costs. Possibly with economic development, it might lead to limiting or delaying particular development projects. Maybe not economic development across the board, but particular projects might be hindered by the East Area Plan. And that's the conclusion of my presentation. So if you guys have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them in the, what, minute I've got left?
You have a minute, maybe
I have a minute.
Two.
Okay.
I'll just say thanks on our behalf. This is a overwhelming amount of detail and planning, and that's one that I'm glad you're sitting on the committee rather than me. So very good job.
Thank you. I think you're good sports for sitting in city council meetings until, golly, past midnight. So I owe you all a great debt as a member of this community.
Just a couple of final comments that the vision supplemental information that was loaded on your laptop is the proposed implementation tasks for fiscal year 2012 and 13, and that's that May 24th report. That's out for public comment till the 24th of June. The Vision Commission will be bringing that, after they review the public comment, back to you for your official review and approval and consideration of which of those tasks, if not all of those tasks, you wish to give your blessing for the next two fiscal years. There is a reason why they do this at this time in the Vision Ordinance itself, is so that their review, their recommendation, clearly aligns with your budget process. So if there is fiscal impact, that can be identified and you can take that into consideration. The second thing that's in your packet also is you have 1 year's worth now of the vision tracker information from the agenda. So can't really draw any particular conclusions from it, but they're ranked. You can see how all of the different categories and statements, goals, and implementation tasks did or did not affect the vision plan. Thank you very much, Jan. I would, again, like to echo the appreciation I have for all the work that she's done, Commission.
Thank you, Jan.
And the other commission members.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
We'll adjourn till 1:30.